Today's episode is part of a series in response to the COVID-19 outbreak. We'll be releasing a podcast every week that will help charities to A, navigate the rapid digital changes that, you know, have been thrust upon us, B, you know, hopefully set your charity up for digital going forward, and C, provide you with a platform for you to, you know, seek advice and share your stories. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us about how to be more digital, or if you'd like to share how your organisation has coped with the COVID-19 environment, reach out to us at podcasts@charitydigital.org.uk or follow the link in the description. Thanks and enjoy the pod.
Hi everyone, Mimi here, your host for this Charity Digital podcast. You're tuning into our latest episode of the COVID-19 bonus podcast series. If you've been keeping up with these releases, then you may have noticed a slight change in sound quality. We do usually host our podcast in a studio in Shoreditch, but given the current circumstances, we're all joining this recording from the comfort of our own homes. With this in mind, there may be the slight change in quality and the possibility of a postal delivery. We all know we've been shopping on Amazon. Today, I'm bringing back some familiar voices from Charity Digital to tackle the outstanding questions from our audience. Chris hosted episode one of We Answer Your Questions a couple of weeks ago, where our lovely speakers focused more on the product side of being more digital. If you haven't managed to catch this episode yet, don't forget to catch up, but not now, later, as now you're joining me. For this podcast, I'm bringing the team back and we're exploring the rest of your questions and looking more towards the operational side of things. Step one, you find out what tools you need. Step two, what do you actually do with them? Hopefully, that's what we're here to tell you. Okay, enough from me now. Let's welcome back our lovely panel of Charity Digital speakers. We have Stuart.
Hi, Mimi. Glad to be back.
Lisa.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
And Liz.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back. And actually, Mimi, can I just say that I am expecting a delivery, so you might hear the bell go.
That is absolutely fine. I'm sure our listeners will be very forgiving. Okay, let's jump straight into it. So, question one from an anonymous source. I love the anonymous sources. They always make me so intrigued. We have, like everyone else, we want to continue some of our group activities online. However, when looking at meeting options, there are so many and it's hard to know which ones be more suitable and the direction to take these. I think this is something we can all kind of relate to. But Stuart, do you want to kick this one off?
Yeah. So in your question, you've asked about group activities, and really it depends on what type of group activities that you're talking about, whether that would be meetings within your organization, hosting things like youth clubs. So there's lots of different solutions, and the solutions really revolve around what your organization will be doing with that. So when you're looking at different ways that you can take this, there are certain programs like Zoom for video conferencing that you might want to use for internal meetings. However, some of the social media apps such as WhatsApp can be used for video competitions and things like that. And I do believe that Liz has actually some first-hand experience with that.
Yeah, I've been talking too much about my own experiences, haven't I, with you? No, but I mean, I can speak a personal experience, especially with WhatsApp, because my girls sort of carry out online group activities, and they also carry out the online offline as well. So they've had loads of great activity challenges, which is what you've just mentioned, Stuart, a challenge there to do for the various clubs. And one example that springs to mind is each individual participant has recorded a short clip of themselves doing a challenge involving the same item that all the others are using. Like it could be a water bottle or a toilet roll that was quite popular when everyone was grabbing for the toilet rolls. And then they've all recorded it and then they've sent it to the host, and the host has edited it and put it in a big video for the whole group. And that's been posted online within their group WhatsApp, or it's been posted on TikTok. But be careful, because TikTok, you have to be over 13, obviously, to use TikTok. And so that's been a really good experience for them, you know, to sort of do your online challenges and activities offline and then put them back online. So, yeah, that's been really good experiences for all of us. I don't know whether anyone else has got anything to say. Lisa, have you got anything?
Yeah, so bringing back, I think we'd mentioned it last time as well. But if you know, charities are just offer a free version of a video conferencing tool. I've been made aware of the 8x8 tool on top of the usual suspects like Zoom and Teams and GoToWebinar. And these ones are almost all free. They have a free version, so it's worth having a look, and very importantly, carrying on being in touch with your service users and beneficiaries.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. I think, like you said, Stuart, it depends on what kind of the charity's aim is. But I think everyone's goal at the end of the day is, like you said, Lisa, is just to keep contact with everyone and keep reaching out to the people that need you. So that's brilliant. Thanks, guys. So question two, another anonymous source. I would like guidance on asking staff to use their own laptops for logging onto remote working and their mobiles for calls whilst home working, plus extra advice on data protection. I'm not sure who wants to take the lead on this one. I know, Liz, it's different for you because you are working abroad, so I'm not sure if you have more experience in this. But yeah, if anyone wants to jump in.
I don't mind taking this one, Mimi. Working with the customer service team, I've worked very closely with some of the security programs that we're able to provide. So that would be the number one thing that I would say when asking anyone to use their own device: is that device as secure as a device that they might be using in your office? If it's not, then you're possibly not right asking them to do the right thing. But there are certain ways that this can be dealt with. So using programs like the Advanced Antivirus, a VPN, or something like that can help protect and secure your home workers. What you also need to consider there is it's really, really important that your employees buy in to the security of your data, of their machines, and this only comes down from a culture that from the top down. If as a manager or leader, you're not keeping data secure, how can you expect your staff to at the end of the day? So I've mentioned just one product there, Avast. Avast has a very advanced antivirus software, which does come with a VPN option, some remote access tools and things like that. They're available at a discounted rate from £6 per user per year through Charity Digital Exchange. And I'm sure Mimi will drop a link in the resources tab for you all, so you'll be able to see that.
Making a note of it now.
The other thing with mobile phones, again, you've got similar security issues there. However, I wouldn't recommend that anyone is storing data for a company on their mobile phone. Yes, you might be using it for emails and keeping in contact through WhatsApp, messaging, Teams, lots of different ways. However, that device is easily misplaced, shall we say? And if you've downloaded attachments and things like that, you don't always have full security on that. And for other things like cost and things like that, I think that's something you would need to speak with your staff with. Many of us have got mobile phone contracts where we've got unlimited minutes, unlimited data, and we don't mind making the odd call and things like that. However, if it is something that is going to be a continuing, you may need to be looking at things like VoIP services or actually supplying some SIM cards to your staff, so they've got a line that's dedicated for work. And again, there's information about that on our website. We have a partnership with a company called Frontier, who are able to offer mobile solutions, but there's plenty of other options out there.
Yeah, those are really good points, Stuart. Thanks for that. Really, really good. I just also sort of want to refer people back to one of the webinars we did. We did one on keeping your charity secure in COVID-19, which is done by the National Cybersecurity Centre, which is really worth a watch. Okay, it's very in-depth Q&A afterwards. Everyone's questions were answered. The webinar is about an hour and a half, so if you didn't want to watch all of it, you can just skip through and just get to the questions and answers. And you'll find the webinar under our past events section on the website. And also there's really good articles as well on this subject. I think we did publish one just recently. It might have been around about the 13th of this month. And that was about your cybersecurity risk assessment in 6 steps. So that's a really good article just to flick through and just to reread. And again, you'll find that on our charity digital website. So there are good resources out there as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. The webinar, I was a part of the webinar with Cub, and it was just brilliant. He touched on everything and answered everyone's questions, which is exactly what everyone needs at the moment. So yeah, thank you for that. So lovely. Question 3, we've got from Gemma. Gemma is a charity fundraiser, and due to COVID-19, she's currently working from home and trying to come up with other ways to fundraise. She wants to set up a text donation service, but what one would we recommend? Okay, let's start up with the text donate service. Lisa, do you have any recommendations?
Yes, so I also wanted to point out that Jim has got a very good idea here, because actually the market for text to donate initiative is growing. And over half the adult population has used a phone paid service last year and at least once. So of I think it's 6.2 million of those people, they used the text to donate service. The cap also on text to donate donation has increased from £20 to £30. So it's really a very, you know, good moment to kind of make the decision to switch to, or you know, add a text to donate solution. We've got, if I'm correct, I think it was last year, we did an infographic around text to donate. So we put that in our resources page, but it's worth checking out. We've also got a list of text to donate platforms. And if I can just quote a couple, I would say Donor is a good option. So you set up text keywords, you set up one keyword, you promote it, and then people can start donating to your charity by text. I think that Donor is taking 5% per donation and no other fee, but it's worth checking in. All I know is that the, you know, charities that have used it have found it very easy to set up and to create everything, and they're very helpful as well. I think they have a COVID-19 resource hub that is worth checking out. There's also Donate, and they've been created by the National Funding Scheme. So you register with them, and then basically you can start creating your keyword, your text keyword. There are some fees attached to it, so it's worth checking their website. And I think there's also a minimum that you need to raise, so worth checking them out. And the third option would be InstaGive. So it's a bit of a more all-rounder. You can do SMS campaigns, you can run competitions via text and prize draw on top of, you know, the text to donate activity. So they charge a monthly fee for keyword on top of the donation fee. And you know, they could be also interesting. I might go a bit off tangent there, but it's also worth checking other websites like Savu or Give Us Your Leave or Givergy, because through these platforms, your supporters, they can basically use them to shop online, and the affiliate links are basically the way you can raise money. So basically the affiliate fee is redirected to your cause as a donation. It's very simple, and you're very welcome to check the website. We also did a couple of webinars around social media. So it's also a good way to fundraise using these free tools. We've done a couple of webinars with Lightful. So worth checking this out. Don't know whether you guys are also the ideas?
Thanks for that, Lisa. I see this question really has two sides for it. Lisa's given some explanation on how to take in donations, but I also see there's another side, and it's like, how do you raise those? What are you going to give your audience to make them want to give? So we've had a number of articles on Charity Digital, from top tips to keeping your fundraising goals front of mind during your digital transformation. And we've also got something out there, top 10 virtual fundraising event ideas for charities. Now, this is something that I'm very interested in. So a few of the ideas that have been on there are things like online gaming tournaments, virtual sporting events, cooking classes, workouts. One of my favorites during this, I'm computer game mad. I love my tennis, and there was a charity event where they had the professional tennis players, such as Venus and Serena Williams, teaming up with celebrities to play a tournament on Mario Tennis, raised over $1 million for children's charities in the US.
Wow.
So there's all sorts of things that you can look at there.
Yeah,
I think that's really good. And it actually leads quite nicely onto the latest podcast we've just released, obviously before this one and before the one before. it was about fundraising in isolation. And we had Just Giving from Blackboard on with us, as well as Become Charity. And they were talking about their experiences with fundraising in isolation, how difficult it kind of is and the guidance you have to give your audience. And it's actually a really good listen. It was an extra long podcast, so it is definitely worth catching up with, because they just gave us all the insights that we needed. And then we've also started releasing our digital fundraising day content, so our audience can now catch up with that. So we've released the podcast, and we've also released the webinars. Again, I'll pop this all on the resources so everyone can access it. Brilliant. So that takes us nicely on to question four. The question we have from anonymous source is, we rely heavily on email marketing for our fundraising activations, but what is the advice for sending emails marketing during coronavirus? Are there any other ways charities can engage donors? Well, I'm just going to head straight over to our email guru here. So Liz, what do you think?
Thank you. This is all mine then. Yes, thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, it's been an interesting time with regards to email marketing. It's been challenging because we have been bombarded with emails left, right and centre. And bearing that in mind, it's also a great opportunity for all of you sort of to review your email marketing strategies and to keep on sending updates to your supporters and clients. I would advise to sort of be honest, be open about how your charity has been affected, how it's still being affected, how it's having a direct impact on your mission. Don't be afraid to ask for donations. Make time to really review your words in your emails carefully. Make sure that you've got the right tone, you've got the right language. Review your buzzwords so that at the moment they're perceived very differently now with the pandemic than they were before. So it's just a case really of sending messages that add value, be sympathetic, genuine. I would recommend being short and concise. And even if that's just simply sending a message of thanks or a greeting, just to keep that communication flowing. And I would I would just like to mention sort of two charities that I've been talking to recently that have been sharing their experiences with me with their email marketing. And one of those is Sense, which is a disability charity. And they want more people to learn how to sign, okay, to learn to sign. So they asked a 15-year-old student from Birmingham to teach lessons. And he created a series of videos teaching British Sign Language for free during COVID-19 lockdown. So Sense are using the email automation tool to send out a series of 5 videos to thousands that are signed up online for the classes. And this has proved for them to be sort of really successful in helping to tackle loneliness, especially loneliness and social isolation among disabled people.
That's brilliant. That's really good.
Really, really, really good. It's been so interesting. I've actually shown some of the classes to my girls as well, so they've learned some signs.
And that's lovely.
The other one is JDRF. And I've been speaking to them, and they've been using email to promote their various online discovery events. and online challenges as well. And they've raised awareness and fundraising, and email has been a really crucial part of their targeting and engaging and following up with their audiences as well and beyond their own audiences. And they've told me that it's been a very positive experience and impact for them. And they've had hundreds that have signed up for their Zoom online events. So, yeah, really my advice would be don't stop sending out your campaigns, because email marketing is one of the main communication channels and it's the most personal. However, do be mindful that you're probably sending to inboxes that are already probably really quite saturated. So it's getting that balance, really. So, yeah.
That is brilliant. Thank you, Liz. That's such good advice. Stuart, how do you feel on the subject?
So I'd like to move it away a little bit from email, actually.
Lovely.
Being a social media person and sort of connected through the World Wide Web, I think there's a lot of scope here to change up from just the traditional email marketing.
Do you feel that they go hand in hand, though?
They can go hand in hand. You really can't have one without the other. There are certain, I would say, audiences that are going to take things in small snippets that are already connected to, say, their phones and Twitter and things like that as something they're going to see first. Whereas an email, you might go, I'll read that later. You get 100 more in during that day. True, and it loses its importance to you. Whereas something like a tweet, a Facebook message, you can try things like Facebook groups for your donors to be able to interact with each other, for your staff to interact with each other. Again, as we talked about previously, things like challenges for your donors. I've seen a few of those going on TikTok over the last couple of months, COVID related. You can also do things that might seem daunting that are actually quite simple. So things like a YouTube update on the state of the company, it could be exactly the same as you would put in an email delivered by somebody. As you've been navigating around our site, you've probably seen a few videos from our CEO, Jonathan, just keeping everyone up to date on what we're doing at Charity Digital, a bit about how he feels about the situation and how the charity sector is faring overall. There are options for things like YouTube, where charities can get premium channels at free or discounted rates through the Google for Nonprofit program, which I know I'm going to talk a little bit about in a little bit, so I won't say much more on that one. And Lisa, I believe you have some examples as well of how people have been engaging with their donors.
Yes. Thank you, Stuart. And I'm going to really good off tangent there, because picking on what you said, Liz, there's also I think it was last month I attended a panel around COVID and fundraising, and the I think it was the Asthma British Lung Association that was taking part. And one of the things they were saying is that direct mail, so the good old paper through the letterbox, had been working because people were indoors, so they had a bit more time to read the mail. So obviously, so it was an idea that I found interesting. And then he also, the gentleman talked about their most recent findings around their audience. So they are helping asthma sufferers and anybody with any lung or respiratory disease, with a lot of information, a lot of education and guidance around the best way of kind of living with the condition. And usually the adult asthma sufferers are less likely to engage with their content on the website, and the people that tend to really subscribe to their newsletter usually are families with young children, because they have more acute symptoms of asthma in general, and they need information because they're not used to living with that. But with the crisis, because COVID-19 is affecting respiratory systems, they've now seen a lot of this adult audience coming more to their website with questions around COVID-19 and what to do. So they had a surge in the number of subscribers. So they went from 40,000 to 120,000.
That's so interesting. That's great.
And they've done some daily newsletter sharing info about how to shield, what sort of, whether you should still carry on using your inhalers, whether of course, you still need to go and see your GP if you have any problem. So a lot of very interesting resources and guidance helping people. They've done some webinars and social media activity, and they've wrapped fundraising around it because most of the time their service users are also their supporters. And through that sort of newsletter campaign, whereby they usually generate £3,000, this activity generated over £10,000 in donation.
That's brilliant.
So they were really really surprised and really, happy it turned out as well. And they're carrying on this activity because they know that people are after that kind of information. So if they can link it to very needed donation, it will also work well. And another thing they also discovered, so before COVID-19, they did some data insight around the use of the UK website, and the content is great. I mean, they have a high SEO, but people were not using the website to navigate between pages. They were using Google directly, and then they were jumping in, the content.
So a high bounce rate, like coming straight up.
Yes, very high bounce rate. So the short-term tactic, he was explaining that because people are using this website this way, they wanted to have it more as a Wikipedia. So like you have Wikipedia and they have a pop-up donation page asking for donation on each page. So they basically did that with their website. So even if people are bouncing back and leaving the website and going back through Google, they will still see the donation button at the top of the page. So they've managed to kind of navigate this high bounce rate.
That's brilliant. They've really They've really understood their audience and what they do. Yeah. And instead of like fighting against it, they're kind of like, okay, this is the decision you're making. We're going to work with you in a way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. That's brilliant. And also reaching out to a wider audience, not just their direct service users.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, so taking us on to our next question from Henry. Henry is trying to set up a Google G Suite for non-for-profit. He's verified his donation. Oh, what a tongue twister. He's verified his domain and is now asking to validate for a validation token. Stuart, I can't even finish this question, but I think it's coming straight to you.
No worries there, Mimi. Yeah, so the Google for Nonprofit program is something at Charity Digital that we run the validation service for. So all you need to do is log into your Charity Digital Exchange account and go to the validation token tab. Now, to access this, you will need to have a fully qualified account on the Charity Digital Exchange program. To be eligible for that program, your organization needs to be a charity registered with one of the three UK charity commissions or hold HMRC charitable tax exempt status. Once your organization has been validated, the token will be there in your account. Now, you may have an account that's been with us for quite a while and the token that's there is currently expired. All you need to do is click on the orange add token button, fill out the short form. Now, there is a little quirk with this form. If you were the person that was previously responsible for collecting the token, you may need to swap around your first and surnames as that form doesn't like repeated information. So there is a full guide to this available on our website. And again, Mimi, if you wouldn't mind popping the link into
That's
the resources
fine.
Tab so everyone can find that.
Definitely. So just to repeat the question on that is basically to help Henry to find his validation token so that he can go through with the link. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Stuart.
I think I was a little bit unclear. There was, to begin with, how to get your validation token, and then if you've never seen that before, how you go about sort of signing up.
No, that's perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, lovely. So then that moves us on to Alison on question 6. So Alison works for a small charity who work with young people, and their IT system is a tad old-fashioned and a lot of them are not very tech savvy. She's painted the picture a little bit more for us by saying they're only just upgrading from Windows 7 to Windows 10 and starting to explore home working. But their main concern is, of course, data exchange on what platforms they can use for secure data exchange to follow GDPR. They want to look into the options for staff working from home, using their own laptops. What would we suggest? What were the best data sharing options for them? And also, of course, everyone's working to a budget.
Cool. I'll kick off with this one. So starting afresh, sort of with that transition from Windows 7 to Windows 10, there's a couple of options that you can look at with that, and whether that would be something like desktop licensing, which is available through the Exchange program. But what you'll find is that with desktop programming, you are going to need to add on to that and add on to that. It's not just about having your operating system in place. You then have to consider what office suites that you will be needing and how they will work. I would suggest that if you're at that point where you're starting to make a big transition, that you might want to skip a phase and look at something like the Microsoft 365 packages, which is an all-in-one solution where you will be, in certain circumstances, able to upgrade the operating system and have the office suite that you would require. Now, there is a plus with this, that it's all programs that your organization would mostly be used to using and are GDPR compliant. Things like Outlook is perfectly fine. You have online storage included as part of Microsoft 365 packages. So cloud storage, where organizations can upload documents, other members of that organization can then download, edit, re-upload, great messaging tools and things like that. With Teams. And just on a final note, we did talk about using home laptops, PCs, and things like that. All the same security considerations need to be taken in place. So that's all I've got to say on that one, really. So we'll see who else has got some thoughts.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because, Liz, you're based in Madrid. It's not just a standard work from home at the moment, obviously, with coronavirus. And I know it's very different from where you are. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Mimi, like you say, I do work from home. It's been, yes, I've been working from home pretty much ever since I started working with Charity Digital. So this whole working from home setup, I'm really used to. But I do use my personal laptop to work with. So I've had to separate home and work profiles, which means that there's no overlap of data, so security is a lot tighter. I've also set up work and personal profiles on my web browsers as well. And I've found that for my mental health, it's been good to build up that invisible wall between work and personal life on my laptop, because it's easier sort of to maintain that work and live life balance that way.
Yeah, I can imagine that is so difficult because you almost see your laptop as your work laptop. Even if you want to watch Netflix, it's still your work laptop. Yeah, completely.
I've actually taken that one step further. I changed the layout of my living room for the weekend to pack the home office away. So
that's a good idea.
That's
a good one. But do you know what? The only problem and exception that I've had is with my personal calendar. It's been a lot easier to manage your life when you can see all the calendars as one in one application. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I've had.
Yeah, I have that issue as well. I always want to make sure I know what events are going on in my work life to be able to schedule almost my personal life around it.
Well, there are ways of managing that through things like Google Calendars and things like that, where you can have an input from your Outlook calendar and then your personal calendar from your phone. So yeah, have a look around for some apps. There's loads of them that will amalgamate them all together for you.
Yeah, that's
lovely.
That's good.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we have our last question now, and I actually think it's a brilliant one to end on. It's more of a statement from Jean-Paul, but I think it sums up how everyone is feeling currently. So the statement is, we're in trouble using digital, we need your help. And I honestly couldn't have said it better myself. When I first started Charity Digital, I was not a tech savvy person at all. I'm now the go-to person for Zoom. I have no understanding how that happened. All that I can say is that it was practice, practice, practice. And I think that would be one of my key takeaways and one thing for people to do, and a top tip kind of thing. What is a top tip that you would give someone, give the audience, to start taking their first steps on this digital journey? Lisa, I'm going to come to you first. No pressure.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I'd say, well, first of all, well done, Jean-Paul, for realizing you need digital to help you in your mission. That's a good first step. Don't be afraid. Be brave. I'd say you can join other platforms where you can find charity professionals and have a chat with them. There's our very own Facebook group, so Charity Digital Forum and Events. There's also Charity Connect, I think. That's also a great forum for professionals to share their experience, to chat in similar circumstances, and find out what can work and what has not worked for them. So yeah, be great to share experience with fellow professionals, and it's a bit less daunting. And yeah, if I can maybe go for a second tip.
Go on, we'll let you have it.
Thank you. I think it's also important for you to understand what you'll be using digital for. Who would you be reaching and what do you want to tell them? Would it be for fundraising? Would it be to find new volunteers? You know, so a lot of brainstorming to do, I reckon. What else do you think, Liz and Stuart?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think digital really is a way of doing things, not an end in itself. And as Lisa, you've just mentioned, which is a really good point, you need to start looking at what you want to do with the digital first. So start with baby steps and start looking for free and cheap tools and platforms that are easy to manage and can make a massive difference really to your end users. So like you've mentioned, Lisa, then you join sort of Facebook groups, social media groups. You can read about resources available. We've got lots of information in our COVID-19 resource hub and the Charity Digital website. And there's lots of stuff out there. Yes. Stuart, what's your take on it?
You've both covered that really, really well. I'd just like to reiterate, it's sort of be brave, try things. Don't be afraid to fail, because sometimes things don't work for you or your organization. And sort of overall, I would say, think of it as taking lots of little steps to move you further forward with digital. Focus on something to begin with that is vital to your organization. Maybe at the moment that will be getting your staff members remote working. Maybe you'd like to move your fundraising focus towards digital platforms. So just one step at a time, one thing at a time, see what works for you. Don't be afraid to discard it if it doesn't, and just continue to try and be more digital.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's a wrap, everyone. Another huge thank you to our lovely speakers for taking time yet again to answer all these brilliant questions for us, and to our listeners. This podcast quite literally couldn't have happened without your questions, so thank you. We kind of know that the quick responses and the panic is kind of starting to settle, and we're turning a corner closer to business as usual, but we're not quite there yet. So if you do still have questions for us, keep submitting them. I'll pop the link in the resource hub back on the Charity Digital page. But we're here to lend you a helping hand. So just let us know what you need and we can try and do our best. Okay, well, that's all we have time for today. Another huge thank you to everyone, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks all.
Bye.